Lucas on Life.
Hello, welcome to Lucas on Life. I'm Jeff Lucas, and tonight I'd like us to think about a subject that seems so relevant at the moment. I'm talking about fear. Having flown back into the UK just a few days ago, I've been hit by a really palpable sense of fear that seems to be everywhere right now, and perhaps we're anxious and nervous for very good reasons. With America siding with Russia in the UN vote just a few days ago, with uncertainty about America's ongoing role in NATO, our nervousness for Ukraine, coupled with the ongoing tragedy that continues in the Middle East between Israel and Palestine, there's just a lot of fear around. The cryptocurrency market is currently flashing extreme fear signals. The stock market itself is down. And all of this is not just denting the financials, it's creating a lot of fear and uncertainty more broadly. Fear, it's an emotion that can stalk us all, even in the best of times. Jan Martel, who wrote The Life of Pi, said, "Fear is life's only true opponent." And let's face it, there are plenty of opportunities to be afraid. It's been said that we fear life, we fear death, we fear what is not, and we fear what might possibly be. Fear pushes us around, makes us freeze when we should flee, roughly shoves us into panic when calm reflection would be so much better. We're frightened of what we know, and we're terrified that there are awful factors behind everyday life that we don't know. Fear, it ruins our waking, robs us of sleep. We're afraid of intimacy, rejection, heights and clowns. We fear failing. We fear spiders. And because of fear, nations go to war, stock markets tumble, businesses collapse, neighbors despise the people next door, convinced irrationally in some cases that they're a menace. Now, rather obviously, I don't have any easy solutions that can quickly fix our human tendency to be very afraid. But perhaps tonight we can reflect a little on the power of fear and consider what Jesus has to say about it. So tonight, let's talk about fear on Lucas on Life, right here on Premier Christian Radio. We're talking about fear. It was around 1:20 a.m. in the middle of the night when my mobile phone rang very loudly. A shrill ringtone, one that I selected in a moment of madness, pierced laser-like through the thick layers of my deep sleep. I woke up with a start, heart pounding, eyes suddenly wide, and within a second, even before I swung my feet out of the bed, my mind was sprinting into adrenaline-laced action, speculating wildly, pummeled by fear. What's happened? Most of my friends don't phone me in the small hours for a happy little chat, which is one reason why they're still my friends. I couldn't find the phone, which continued to shriek impatiently. In the darkness, I bumped into a rather solid piece of furniture and uttered a word of praise and thanksgiving. I wish, as I bruised myself. I stumbled frantically around the shadowy room at 534 miles per hour, my mind way ahead of me, travelling at warp factor speed, hurtling through a horrifying catalogue of possible reasons for the middle-of-the-night phone call. Maybe someone in our family's been in an accident, is terribly injured, is stranded in Latvia, is lying cold in a mortuary, awaiting my identification. You see, fear, it creates endless, chilling possibilities. At last, I finally located the phone and heard an unfamiliar voice. But the voice that is all too familiar to most of us is that niggling whisper of fear. We know it well. We're intimidated by its hiss. Fear can speed through our minds at a rate faster than any Wi-Fi connection. Ignited and fueled by imagination, fear is devastatingly effective at night. It mugs our exhausted minds and insists that we stay wide awake, restlessly fretting while the hands of the alarm clock crawl around the dial, silently tormenting us as we long for the dawn to break. It punctuates our dreams with horror stories that drench us in cold sweat. We awake relieved, but hope it was just a dream and not a fearful premonition. Being fearful, being afraid, it's what we humans do so well. Perhaps that's why in Scripture, Visiting angels usually introduce themselves with the same greeting, "Don't be afraid." Surely God knows that when it comes to fear, even the most faithful and faith-filled among us can fall prey to its predatory fangs. The biblical character Elijah, he did rather well as a person of faith, performing an assortment of exploits like summoning fire down from heaven, organizing the weather, and raising the dead. Most of us haven't raised the dead lately. Waking a teenage son up in the morning just doesn't count. But that man, so famous for faith, ran for his life and then prayed for death because fear was stalking him. A notelet from the Cruella de Vil of the Old Testament, Jezebel, sent him and his faith packing. It was fear that took him out, a devastating smart missile. And so these days I'm trying to take seriously God's oft-issued command, "Do not be afraid." "Don't do that," he says. If I'm told not to do something, I must have the ability, with God's help, to not go there, to refuse fear's invitations. I'm wrong to cower powerless before the Goliath of fear. I might only have a makeshift catapult and a few stones in hand, but by God, literally, I can topple that giant. And this is more than "don't worry, be happy." I need to learn to replace my anxious thoughts with urgent volleys of prayer. According to Jesus, worry produces nothing. Prayer changes everything. I can place vivid imaginings of dread under arrest, taking my thoughts captive, refusing fear. Is it easy? No. Trust takes practice, discipline. But just because it's easier said than done doesn't mean that it can't be done. Meanwhile, back to that nocturnal phone caller. It turned out that an airline that damaged a bag during a recent trip decided to return it to me in the middle of the night. A rather nice delivery chap told me that he's got my bag, he's just 10 minutes away. Stifling a scream, I gently advise him that it's the middle of the night. "It's an empty bag," I say. "I have no immediate need of it." But he is determined, and he called me 3 more times for directions to my house. And finally, at 2 a.m., he arrived. I had a blissful reunion with my bag and treated it like a returning prodigal. I'd missed it so much. I thanked him warmly. He was just doing his job. And as I wandered back to bed, I realized that my fears, so vivid and terrifying just minutes earlier, were quite groundless. They usually are. Odd things happen when people are baptized by full immersion. I know a minister who wore fisherman's waders so that he wouldn't have to change clothing for the event. The waders leaked and he became one waterlogged pastor, which was awkward. Another hapless, besuited leader delegated the actual baptizing to one of his team, but popped onto the platform to provide a benediction at the end of the service and then stepped back into the tank. Oh dear. My own baptism was something of a fiasco. One was expected to share a testimony prior to the dunking, so I decided to write and perform a song, which was a huge mistake. Enjoined in a duet with a friend, we tortured the fixed, grinned congregation with 7 awful, truly hideous verses. Then, when I was submerged, I kicked my legs up in the air, sending a miniature tidal wave to the front pew, where a group of elderly ladies became like soaked, blue-rinsed, drowned rats. But a more recent baptismal experience was epically aquatic. It was a few years ago, and we were visiting the Holy Land during one of our annual tours. There were 32 members of our group who wanted to be baptized in the River Jordan. The site is allegedly the place where Jesus was baptized by John. Now, we're not precious about these things on our tours. Ours are not, "Wow, Moses had a cappuccino here" expeditions. Nevertheless, being baptized in the same vicinity as Jesus is special and, as it turns out, challenging. At the baptismal site, the Jordan River is about 10 meters wide at most, and the border between Israel and the nation of Jordan is a rope right in the center of the river. On each bank, Jordanian and Israeli border guards usually stand, machine guns in hand. All was going rather well until our friend Jerry waded into the water. My wife, Kay, and I, we gulped. Jerry's a tall chap and the river current was strong, so this might take a little extra effort baptizing him. We meant to ease him back into the water slowly, carefully, but in his enthusiasm, he threw himself backwards, emigrating in the process. For a moment, his head was in the nation of Jordan, his nether regions in Israel. The guards moved a little closer. This could create an international incident. But I didn't immediately see those guards because I was totally underwater, thrown by his sudden backflip. Flailing around, I surfaced to witness our compassionate group laughing hysterically at the sight of our mass immersion. And why did this happen? Well, it's simple. Kay and I had not planted our feet firmly on the riverbed, and thus we were vulnerable. We were not standing securely. Just standing doesn't seem too exciting. The activist's mantra mocks the apparent inactivity or even sloth of standing with a call to perpetual motion. Don't just stand there, do something. But sometimes, particularly when fear is everywhere in the atmosphere, sometimes just standing is all we're called to do as believers, because there's nothing else to be done. In our own lives, perhaps we've come to an impassable junction and we've tried all the usual things. We've prayed, consulted, worked, and planned. We've even exhausted a few useless options like fretting, worrying, being afraid. And now we've bashed into the concrete wall of our own limitations, and all we can do is stand in trust and refuse fear. We're also called to stand, to stand solidly and firm when spiritual warfare rages. Writing to some battle-weary believers in Ephesus, Paul encouraged them to clothe themselves, not with leaky waders, but with the full armor of God, and stand firm even on what he called the evil day. With all that's going on in the world at the moment, perhaps this is one of those evil days. And when it comes to standing, we have to stand solidly on what is true, because it was Paul again who told those endlessly wobbly souls in Corinth, famous for their doctrinal vacillations, that they should stand squarely on the truth that Christ is raised from the dead, and know that because of that wondrous Easter dawn, death is dead to us too. Come to think of it, the writers of the New Testament are rather fond of calling us to adopt a solid, steadfast posture of standing when fear threatens us. Hebrews 12 says this, "Therefore strengthen your feeble arms and weak knees." So perhaps here's a few words of advice for us when we are so tempted to succumb to the overwhelming tides of fear. Today, let's not back off. Let's plant our feet solidly on what we believe. Let's not be intimidated by uncertainty and not be swept away by it. And if we're planning a baptism in the Jordan River at some time in the future, pack a waterproof passport. If battle is raging, doubt torments, fear threatens, or you slammed into the wall of your own powerlessness, let's not just do something, let's stand. As we've been talking about fear, let's realize that Jesus spoke a lot about it. He gave around 125 commands that are recorded in the Gospels. 21 of them are about fear. And the next closest frequency, if you like, is 8 times calling us to love God and love our neighbor. And as we look across the panorama of Scripture, there are 365 commands to us. Do not be afraid. And so, at this time in our history, as we stand firm, trusting God, holding firm in faith in Him, let's this week not be afraid. See you next time. Lucas on Life.